You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Anniversary of the house. Yeah. Close the blinds and pretend that the time has changed. Keep our clothes on the floor, open up champagne. Let's continue tonight, come on, celebrate. That's how we do. Sometimes you gotta stay in, and you know where I live. World Cup just started today. Yeah. Welcome to my house. Big holiday week. Hope you don't have to work all week. We're going to talk to the gunner about how the Marine Corps gets ready. How the Marine Corps gets ready to go on to 96. Okay. The Marine Corps has its own unique way of turning 4 days off into about six, at least five full. Half on the front side, half on the back side. Cause nobody's doing shit the day you get back. Yeah, when that happens, people are like seriously bent out of shape. What? We're doing what today? Yeah. Because normally it's 96 recovery time. Yeah, 96 is 4 days off, right? Do the math. Actually, kind of exciting. All Marine Radio getting ready to go on the road. Yeah, a couple big things happening this summer. The we're converting to become a nonprofit organization, right? So that, and then for the first time in our history, gonna get on the road. And the idea of the whole thing, is that there's events like the Marine Corps Marathon and other big events that the Marine Corps has that, you know, you get a plane ticket and you go and you cover it live. Yeah. Talk to movers and shakers that are there. Blah, 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 blah. So, so gonna start doing that, but that requires, some investing. So, if All Marine Radio could use your help. If you haven't been part of the GoFundMe campaign, get out there. It's on the website. Just go check it out. So, feel free. Okay. But what you have to build is you gotta build a studio. A second studio, essentially a mobile studio. Yeah. And, started doing that over the course of the weekend. So pretty cool. Pretty cool. So the plan is to go broadcast live from Granbury, Texas. And then we'll head to the change of command for the 2nd Marine Division and broadcast live on our, Gunner and I on our trip across America. Yeah, stop in Alabama, see our boy Luke. And so kind of fired up about that. And then maybe up to Quantico. Go see Sun Number One and then drive back. So the chance to take All Marine Radio around the country and kind of blow it up. So excited about that. But on no joking, I tend to joke about it. But if you listen to All Marine Radio and you want to support it, then a good way to do is help us get around the country. So you can find us on the website. Just click on the GoFundMe page, and I will thank you in advance for doing that. But it's going to be so. What do you have to do? Well, you got to have a laptop. I don't even own a laptop anymore. Why do you need a laptop other than to have it on your lap when you watch TV? But I mean, everything that I do on my laptop, I used to do on my laptop. I do on my phone. I remember when I read an article that said you'll do everything you do on your laptop except maybe compose and write on your phone. And if you want to compose and write, then there's going to be things. Like I have one now. It's a Bluetooth keyboard with a little tray. Drop your phone in there. You can link it to your phone. And you touch a button. It moves from your desktop to your phone. And you drop your phone in this tray. And your phone's now, there you go, there's your computer. So, but you do need a laptop, and you need a laptop to route the audio. Yeah, it's an audio router, if you will. And so like the audio that comes out, like this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Open up the champagne, pop,
pop.
It's my house.
It's my house. Come on. Okay, so that stuff all comes out, has to come out of someplace. It'd be a very busy place with your phone. So you need a laptop, and it doesn't have to be a super laptop. Because you're gonna route some audio, and then you use the internet to look up stories and things like that. And you gotta have a mixer, and you don't really want to destroy your studio to go do this, because then when you come back, you gotta rebuild it, and the electricity, the electrical gremlins. Oh my God. It's absolutely horrible. If you don't get them all plugged in and pointing in the right direction and you're trying to solve problems, it sucks. Because you can't hear your audio and you can't figure out why. Anyway, it's a nightmare. So, doing that. And then you need some software programs, and then you got to test the whole thing out. Now, here's the biggest question mark that I've got to solve is, so you're doing your show. When you go to a remote location, okay, and you're doing your show, and the question is, you have your mixer, you have microphones, you have your cell phones plugged into the mixer, so you can do interviews via the phone, but you're on location at an event, you're interviewing local people, all kinds of stuff. Talk about a good time. It's a pretty good time. Because you don't know what's going to happen always. And it's pretty hilarious to do it live. So I love doing it. The biggest step though is getting the audio from your computer to stream onto the internet. Now, my question to myself is, how much bandwidth do I need to be able to send the signal out? Because if I don't need a whole lot of bandwidth, I can do that via a data link on a cell phone. And if you can do it from a data link on a cell phone, which I don't know you can, I have to prove that. So I have to find out how many bars do you need to be able to do it. And if you can do it on a cell phone, it's over. Because, for instance, if we went and did the Marine Corps Marathon, which would be awesome to do, but if we went to do the Marine Corps Marathon, or how about like the Sunset Parade, Or how about, you know, Friday night parade at, you know, at 8th and I.
Yeah.
Cover those things live. Interview Marines and stuff like that. Interview, you know, the officers and staff NCOs. I mean, all the different stories that you would tell. If you didn't, when you go to those things, one of the things you need is, you need, could I get a table and then three chairs? Yeah, we can do that. Okay. So you do that. And then after that, you need a power source, which normally isn't an issue. Run an extension cord, and then you bring your own power strip, right? So I got power, I got a table and two chairs, and can we put it in the shade? Yeah, we can do that. We'll put a tent over it. How about that? That's awesome. Put a tent over it. So then we put the tent over it, and the only other thing is you need access to an open internet connection, okay? Not some kind of DOD crazy connection, but like a legitimate commercial internet connection. And then you plug into there, and boom, you're set. But if you don't need the internet connection, all you need is power, you're free. Yeah, you're free. So that's we'll do that here. We'll perfect that, I hope, in the coming month, and then we'll head out to Texas first, broadcast from the Gunners hometown, and then from Camp Lejeune, and maybe one spot in between. So excited, looking forward to it. So, but honestly, could use your financial help to get it done. And then once we do that one, then it's like get out the calendar and where do we want to be? What are the things that All Marine Radio ought to be at? Yeah. So exciting stuff. So that's going on. I bought Charles Krauthammer's book over the weekend, Things That Matter. And I went and looked for it last week. Okay. And I went to a bookstore, and the Barnes & Noble that I went to, it moved, for God's sakes. Okay? I was like, what? Yeah. So anyway. The book, like, it took one paragraph for the hook to be planted in me. Okay? So everybody knows this if you listen to the program. I'm a baseball fan. Okay? I grew up in baseball. My life was shaped by being around baseball. I would say some of the way I looked at my job in the military as an infantry officer came from baseball. Keeping your head in the game and thinking 2-3 plays ahead in a dynamic event for me came from baseball. So I love baseball. The other thing, in case you haven't noticed, that I love is I love profanity. I don't use it because I'm weak. You know, people that use profanity, it's a sign of weakness. What? No, it's not. Well, why do you swear? Why do you cuss? I like to. I think it's fun to me. It's funny. Okay. Now, I can do it when I'm pissed, right? But most people do it when they're pissed. But for me, it's funny. I had a very, very lovely woman call my program years ago and told me, and this is the one that went over the airwaves, so you can't cuss. But I used to use softcore profanity and, you know, hell, damn, crap, stuff like that. And so she called and said, Mac, I love your program, but it bothers me that you use profanity, and I really wish you wouldn't. It's a sign of weakness. And I said, you know, man, first of all, I apologize. You know, my mom would slap me across the face if she knew I did that. But you know what? I don't use profanity because I'm weak. I said, I use profanity because I love it. And she started laughing, and she said, I knew this wasn't a good idea. And I said, I go to profanity like a baby goes to his mother's bosom, okay? I love it. So knowing that about me now, in case you didn't, here's the first paragraph of the introduction, for God's sakes, in Charles Krauthammer's, God rest his soul, Things That Matter. All right. Introduction, part one, the book. What matters, question mark? Lives of the good and the great, the innocence of dogs, the cunning of ants, the elegance of nature, the wonders of space, the perfectly thrown outfield assist. Now, unless you're a baseball fan, you don't get that. The perfectly thrown outfield assist. It's beautiful. It gets cut loose from an outfielder's hand and sails, and you have time to watch it, and you're like, ugh. And then if it gets there in time, you get this play. It's awesome. The difference between historical guilt and historical responsibility. Homage and sacrifice in monumental architecture, fashions and follies, and the finer uses of the F word. So that's the first in tribute. That's the first fucking paragraph in Krauthammer's book. And I'm thinking, he wrote this for me. Krauthammer and I would have been boys, for God's sake. That paragraph speaks to me. The second paragraph is, I think, genius, too. What matters? Manners and habits, curiosities and conundrums, social and ethical. Is a doctor ever permitted to kill a patient wishing to die? Why in the age of feminism do we still use the phrase women and children? And then this is the other one that kind of set the hook in me. How many lies is one allowed to tell to advance stem cell research? And so Krauthammer, a doctor, and so I want to talk about abortion today. So anyway, I took a picture of the book and I sent it to a bunch of my friends and said, hey, if you haven't seen this book, if you haven't read it, read it. If you have read it, what'd you think? None of my friends have read it yet, but they're going to. I would recommend you do it too. It's a collection of his work that he did over the years, and I think you'll appreciate him. World Cup of the weekend. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I don't know that I've ever rooted for the Russians in anything in my life. Okay? Anything. Ever. So, I think it's Saturday rolls around, and I'm watching the introduction, and the game's in Moscow, and the Russian national team playing. Now, let me just tell you, Russia is a sad country. Yeah, it's a sad, sad, sad country. It has been, it was set upon by communists. And so they went to a feudal system under the Tsar to a system of communism. And we all know communism sucks. And so, you know, then they're set upon by the Third Reich. And then Stalin sets upon them. And there's millions, right? So estimated total number of people that died in the Soviet Union in World War II, 20 million. 20 million. Yeah, that's a big number. Any way you slice it or dice it. Now, again, the footnotes that go with that number, you can question some, but let's just say it's a ballpark number. Then after that, Stalin gets after it and kills millions more. And so the Russian people, and now like with Vladimir Putin, can you imagine a country that size with those kind of natural resources? And if you had American capitalism unleashed in it, what could Russia be? Yeah, it could be an incredible country. But anyway, so those downtrodden, poor sons of bitches, I mean, They're all singing their national anthem, and they're going to play Spain. Spain is powerhouse, and the only chance Russia has is to play defensively, force it into an overtime shootout, and then roll the dice in the overtime shootout. And that's exactly what they did, and they win. They win. They weren't even supposed to reach, like, the round of 16. They beat one of the favorites of the tournament. and you're watching it going, it was awesome theater. It was awesome theater. And right now, Mexico, who I hate, is playing Brazil, who I love. So go Brazil. So yeah, the World Cup is incredible theater. So if you haven't been paying attention, it's a good time because soccer is pretty good. And I'm not the biggest soccer fan, but I appreciate good athletics. And I've learned a little bit about soccer as I've watched it. And I will tell you what, the most dramatic thing that I've seen was the shootout last night or yesterday between Denmark and Croatia. It was crazy. Croatia beats Denmark, and both goalies made big saves in the shootout. And, pretty crazy. So, World Cup on today, too. I can't remember who's playing. Japan and somebody else, I think, is playing after this. But high theater in Russia. Check it out. I would encourage you to. I want to talk about, I need to get to an email. Ohio Man. Yeah, Ohio Man is down in Pensacola. All right. So we're visiting Pensacola, my first time back in 30 years. I take the boy to the Naval Aviation Museum on base. Okay, now, Ohio Man, right, he's from the wing. Just after we walk in, we pass an area where there are about 10 various squadron plaques on the wall, about 50 feet from where we're walking. I pointed to the Red Devil plaque and told them that's the squadron I was attached to for 6 months. Then I noticed that the Westpac 9192 and said, hold on. As we walked around some railing and got closer, I put my finger next to my name and the boy's jaw dropped. You're in the museum. I had no idea the plaque was there. Great moment of the trip. No matter how they got my call sign, no matter if they got my call sign wrong, it was crease, not cramps. Maybe you didn't. Maybe they redesignated you as cramps. Notice Gary's static cling is four lines above me. Static just sent me a nice note the other day. Static is a funny, funny guy. He was our air officer in Iraq in 2004 for the division. And then so impressed General Mattis that he worked for General Mattis, I think, on two other occasions. But, yeah. Gary Kling, F-18 guy, call sign, static. Ohio Man, oot and a boot down in Florida. So, pretty cool story. Can you imagine walking in a museum and your ass is in it? And your kid, you're right, it constantly like, oh yeah, whatever. You know, you're blah, 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 blah. And you roll into the museum like, yeah. You think that museum would be there without my name in it? I don't think so. Boom! Yeah. Win for the good guys. So I thought that was kind of funny. The couple other things before we officially open the program and take a quick look at the news. Gettysburg. Today's day two of Gettysburg, don't you know? Right? And so I want to talk to Mike. I want to do some math. One of the key things that happens if you follow Gettysburg is on day one, west of town, there's the initial engagement. Okay, so if you look at Gettysburg as a wagon wheel, Gettysburg is the center of the hub. All these different roads lead to Gettysburg. I think 9 different roads feed into the hub of Gettysburg. From 9 o'clock. You have Henry Heth coming down to get his guys some shoes, so he's going to go into Gettysburg. You have Lee telling Heth. You have Lee without his cavalry, so he doesn't know where Meade is. He doesn't know where he gets reports of sightings of cavalry, but he has really no idea where. Guy's name is John Buford. He's from Kentucky, Brigadier General type. Buford's got his eye on Lee, and Meade knows exactly where Lee is. So Lee's blind, Meade isn't, and so Buford's down in Gettysburg already. And they occupy a position west of town. He's communicated with Reynolds the commander of the First Corps, who's the furthest north corps of the Union Army. So his scouts were down the spoke, the 9 o'clock spoke. So you have cavalry scouts down that spoke. Heth wants to go get shoes. Lee, blind, without his cav guys, says, right, and they were the aviation component, they were the ISR, they're everything. He says to Heth, do not bring on a general engagement. Heth looks at him and says, no problem, sir. Just going to look for shoes. Right? Epic historical words in American history. So, it's interesting that he heads down the road. Now, we were talking, we got into this impromptu Civil War ballistics discussion a week or two ago. So I want to do just a little bit of math with Mike today relative to that, the engagement west of town. The cavalry guys that are in Buford's cavalry regiment have been equipped with the Sharps carbine. So I want to go over their rate of fire. It's a repeating rifle, right? So we're gonna go over that. And as opposed to a muzzle loading infantry division. Okay? And really the secret of day one and the Union, how the Union does well on day one is a is the fielding of a rifle. Because their rate of fire was so high. But we'll talk about that with Mike. But, day two of Gettysburg is, Longstreet's countermarch. Longstreet's accused in history of dragging his feet, didn't like the plan, went too slow. Him going slow, contributes to them not being able to take Little Round Top, which they just missed, I would tell you, by virtue of minutes. And so that's hung on Longstreet. And maybe it should have been. Maybe it should have been. But a lot of anxiety on the southern side after Gettysburg. It is the battle for Little Round Top. And somebody sent me an email, I don't know, after we were talking about it, and said, hey, I'd be curious to know when you went to Gettysburg, what decisions did you look at? Yeah, you know, you can, you know, as military guys, you know, you would go up there and do kind of what's called a toot, tactical exercise without troops. The Gettysburg toot. And you kind of tour the battlefield. Here's that. And I thought, you know, it's such a waste. So, I did a lot of work at the Library of Congress and National Archives to find firsthand accounts of the battle. if you go into the official records of the Civil War, you'll find them. And then I would give packages to different lieutenants. Okay, the first decision we're going to study is day one, west of town. And we're going to study John Buford and his decision to take up a position west of town and why he does that. Okay. So that's stop number one. Okay. Stop number two is at the end of the day, the decision to withdraw from west and north of town through the town to the place where the battle's ultimately fought, which is a ridge a little bit south, just southeast of the town. It starts on Culp's Hill, kind of a fish hook kind of thing, curves around, and it goes all the way down to Little Round Top. So we'll talk, and then that's the second decision. Third decision is Lee's plan on day two, and where it comes from. And it's really interesting history. I have a letter that maybe I'll bust out today. I have a letter that from Lee's engineer officer. So he's kind of his reconnaissance guy who talks about being woken up by Lee as he slept by the fire. And so he comes back, but he gives Lee a report, but his report's wrong. His report's wrong. He doesn't see somebody. And so he paints Lee a bad picture. So Lee's plan is probably not going to work from the get-go because of factual errors in it. And then it's poorly executed. Even given that, they come within a whisker on Little Round Top of doing it. And so we look at Lee's plan, right? And so we listen to the intelligence reports, and it's really cool to hear, you know, lieutenants, you know, hearing firsthand accounts for the first time, and this intelligence report, and then them talking about it and saying, but he's got the wrong information from the start. That's the plan's based on it.
That's right.
That's right. And off we go to execute it. And so, but again, the lesson is in execution. Even if the plan's wrong, you can make it work, right? You got to adjust the plan. And the way you, as an American, the way you do it is you slide a whole bunch of firepower in there as you're making the adjustments, which gives you time and backs them off. So, you know, you have very cool conversations about that. So we talk about that decision. Then we go through the events on Little Round Top. And I would tell you, believe it or not, for those of you that know a little bit about, history, Joshua Chamberlain is kind of the hero of Gettysburg. Well, he's really not. His brigade commander is a guy named Strong Vincent. In my opinion, Vincent is the hero of day two. He sees a courier who's looking for his division commander, and he can't find him. So this guy's running around. He's got his little courier flag flying, and so Vincent stops him. He says, "Hey, who are you looking for?" He said, "I'm looking for General Barnes." And Vincent says, "What do you? I have a message for him. Let me see it, sir. I'm not allowed to do that. Let me see it." So he reads the message, and the message is from the division in the corps. The guy named Governor. He's a general. His name's Governor Warren. He's the engineer officer for the Army of the Potomac. He was up on Little Round Top. He got his binoculars out, and he sees the South, the Confederate forces under Longstreet. He sees them getting ready, moving to try to envelop Little Round Top. And he knows if they take Little Round Top, they're going to roll the left flank of the Union, of the Army of the Potomac. And they're going to get routed out of Gettysburg. So he sends this message to David, to Barnes, to get a brigade here now. Well, time is of the essence. Minutes counted. And so Vincent intercepts it. He then hands the message back to the courier, and he said, you know, I saw General Barnes there. Tell him that I'm taking my brigade to Little Round Top. Right? So with that, he gives orders to the brigade to go. He's on his horse, takes his flag bearer, and they go up to Little Round Top. And he looks, right, his oh shit moment. Oh shit. So, you know, they come back and they start getting shot at by, you know, Confederates, artillery batteries and stuff. And so they come down off the hill, and he's yelling at his guys, you got to go, you got to go. They come over the hill as the Confederate forces under guys like Hood and McLaws are beginning to sweep, and they have a meeting engagement at the top of, you know, at the top of Little Round Top. Yeah, they're coming from both sides, and they meet on the crest of Little Round Top. There's a 23-year-old, I told this story before, but he's he graduated from West Point, I think less than 2 years before this. He's now a lieutenant colonel. His name's Patrick O'Rourke. He leads the 44th New York Regiment, which is in the front of the brigade. He doesn't even have his guys stop to load their weapons, right? Their bayonets are already fixed on their weapons. So he tells the bugler, sound the charge. And from a column of fours, so your firepower, if you're in a column, is not unmasked to the front, right? If you're in a column, your firepower is maximized to the flanks when you would turn and everybody can shoot. But to the front is four guys, and that ain't helping. So they sound the charge from moving in a column of fours, and they have a swamp fight. Yeah. On the slope of Little Round Top. And so you see these guys who make these decisions that save the Union's left flank. Chamberlain is in the back of the column, right? And so this fight begins, and as O'Rourke in the lead starts the fight, Vincent is positioning his other regiments, go to the left of them, go to the left of them, go to the left of them, go to the left of them. Vincent winds up on the far left flank. Okay? So the fight's taking place to his right, largely up on Little Round Top. He's down off Little Round Top, kind of on the left flank of the entire Union position. And so they wind up, you know, guys were staggering towards them, and they blasted them, and then the order is given to counterattack, and they counterattack. But that sequence of events, really in the Eastern theater of the Civil War, it's the first time that the Union, the Army of the Potomac, every time a big decision gets made, they have a competent, qualified officer that's making it. Vincent was from Pennsylvania, so he marched back into his home state. They'd been fighting in Virginia, right? They marched through Maryland and into Pennsylvania. Now he's going to fight in his home state. And there's a whole bunch of guys from Pennsylvania that are in key positions. So that part of it's pretty interesting. But day two. So we looked at that, you know, and again, you're sitting there on the battlefield reading these firsthand accounts of, you know, the fighting and them talking about the smoke and the slope of the hill and all the rest of this stuff. And you're looking at it. And then history comes alive. It's awesome stuff. And then the last decision we looked at was Lee's plan on day three, Pickett's charge, the forlorn hope. You know what? Well, it's, you know, people are like, oh, that was suicide. No, it wasn't. Lee put more artillery hub to hub than anybody had ever seen, to include observers from Europe. There was something like 270 artillery pieces stacked. And what he was going to do was blow a hole right in the center of their position on the forward slope. But his artillery guys screwed it up. Most of their rounds went over the positions. Hot day, humid day, smoke hung in the air. They couldn't observe their impacts well. So most of what they shot. So those were the five decisions. So there you have it. But, yeah, Gettysburg going on today. So we'll talk to Mike a little bit about the ballistics of that, how many rounds. And then I was getting ready this morning. I have to tell you that if somebody said, okay, Mac, we're gonna bring chefs in. What if you could have your choice of breakfasts, what would you have? Now, don't judge me on that. Well, you can judge me on it like I give a rip. I would have peanut M&Ms and Pepsi. That's right. It's a habit I developed, I think, in Okinawa. But simple, tastes good. I got a bit of a sweet tooth, if you can't tell. That's horrible. Yeah, I'm going to eat oatmeal and fruit later. I'll get around to that. But my go-to breakfast, that would be it. That would be it. So, happy Independence Day. We'll talk about that as well. I'm talking to my cousin Tom, and he said, you know, did you make up that whole thing with the fuck you font about the Declaration of Independence? I said, yeah. He goes, that was actually moderately brilliant. Because if you didn't hear me do it last year, I'll kind of go through it a little bit. But right, your assignment for the next 48 hours, read the Declaration of Independence. Okay, read the Declaration of Independence. It's one of the most angry political documents I've ever read. Certainly the angriest in American political history. Right, and so I was doing this. I do this little thing about when King George receives it, right? So, you know, King George, he's a king. He's got all these people around him. Have we checked the mail today? Yeah. Anything in it? Well, we got this thing from the colonies. What is it? Well, it's labeled Declaration of Independence. Oh, here we go. And so it's not like King George... It's not like he'd never seen one of these documents, right? The British Empire spans the globe. They were always dealing with this kind of stuff. So, you know, he rolls his eyes, whatever. They got to get their revolution on. I got it. And then the adjutant looks at him and says, this one's kind of different, though, sire. It might be a little bit more serious than others. Oh, really? Well, let me have a look at it. No, we don't think you'll look at it. Because Foreign Ministry has it, and they're gonna get in touch with the people that wrote this, and we're gonna see what we could do. Now I'm curious. I'm the king. Show it to me. So they roll it out, right? Declaration of Independence at the top. And what is the first thing that King George sees? They had the balls to sign the son of a bitch? Are you kidding me? Nobody's ever done that. And who is this with that gigantic signature? That it looks like his name's John Hancock. What font is that? What crazy font is that? The adjutant. That would be the fuck you font right there. Right? The king's head snaps. Poof. What did you say? Well, sire, I'm just an observer, but if I was going to tell you which font that is the fuck you font. And then King George looks at it and goes, that is the fuck you font. All right, this shit is not. Well, they are getting their asses kicked. And then he reads the document, and then he's like, oh, hell no. Get the army. The British army, right? The British friggin' army, the most powerful army on the planet, brought to us by the most powerful navy on the planet. Yeah, right? So the United States of America, we're the little engine that could. We are that. And so if you haven't read the Declaration of Independence recently, do it. It's an awesome document. And the John Hancock font, that's right. So it makes me laugh, right? Here you go. So my favorite document. Anyway, good morning to you. Welcome to All Main Radio on a Monday. Holiday week. Hope you don't have to work all week. I hope you're able to take a couple days off during the week, and then it's a short week. So we'll be here today, tomorrow. Obviously, take the 4th off. Be here Thursday and Friday. So good morning. Good Monday morning to you. Alex Hollings, he from SoftRep, going to join us in 18 minutes. And then Mike Musselman's going to join us. Tomorrow, I want to talk about history tomorrow. So I got to find some scholars. Yeah, good luck on that deal. So, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. And again, could use your help, on the GoFundMe front, trying to get the program to Camp Lejeune, to Granbury, Texas. So, if you could see it in your capacity to support All Marine Radio, we would all appreciate it. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official today. Two at Gettysburg. This is dedicated to Strong Vincent. Colonel, United States Army, was killed on top of, he didn't actually die on top, he was wounded high on his thigh. The vascular surgeons, as they were at the time, were not able to stop the bleeding, and he slowly bled to death. But I would tell you, without his action at Gettysburg, without his initiative, without his action and calmness in the face of the most powerful army on the American continent at the time, and that was the Army of Northern Virginia under the command of Robert E. Lee. Without the action of Strong Vincent on day two, Civil War has a different outcome. So, dedicated to him. And decisive people who don't have to get it right out of the chute, but they fight and they evolve their decision and they win. So, to decisiveness, to keeping your head in the game, to not trying to be perfect, to being a fighter, all that is, to me, embodied in Strong Vincent. So what is Chamberlain's role? Chamberlain is a regimental commander on the flag. And Chamberlain, Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, wounded 6 times during the Civil War. Body pretty much wrecked by that. If you could imagine, 57 caliber rounds hitting you, shrapnel hitting you. He's physically a wreck after the war. But Chamberlain was no slouch. I don't believe he's the hero of Little Round Top. And factually, I think you can make a case that, I don't care, but when you talk about Little Round Top, people talk about Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, and that's fine. The hero of Little Round Top is the guy who gets everybody there. Because without him, the left flank is getting rolled up, and we're on to some other place. Philadelphia is going to be surrounded. Harrisburg, the capital, is going to fall. So, interesting stuff when you talk about Gettysburg. So, it's dedicated to Colonel Strong Vincent from the Keystone State of Pennsylvania, who on this day, 200 and how many years ago? 1863. So, it would be 37 years and 1847, 55. So 255 years ago, today, the bright light of history came his way, and he didn't shrink from it. He stood up, and he was accounted for, and he was a leader, and he paid the ultimate price for this experiment in democracy. Now reflect on that as you listen to this. And you think about the shit show, the Jerry Springer show that comes to you on your TV every day out of the nation's capital. Not appropriate.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident to thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But that I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran and you came home and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
As you might expect, shaping up to be a warm one. On the East Coast, sunny in 87 in Quantico. Yikes. Yeah, no kidding. Two weather advisories. I would think one of them would be a heat advisory. So we're going to check that out. It is, exactly, heat advisory until 8 p.m. Eastern time tonight. There's an air quality alert in Northern Virginia. That doesn't happen very much. And a pollen alert for those of you who have issues with pollen. Currently 88 degrees in Camp Lejeune in North Carolina under mostly sunny skies. Granbury, Texas, 87 degrees. Now, you know it's going to be hot in Texas because it's an hour earlier, same temperature. Sun hasn't even traveled to that point yet. In Montana, it's sunny and 67. Montana man sent us a picture of some craziness. I don't know if you heard it, though. It might be the funniest thing I've ever heard Montana man say, and he was being serious when he said it. We were talking about, I can't remember what we were talking about. Mike and I were talking about something, and he talked about the Demolition Derby up in Montana. Yeah, you don't see him too many places. But if you ever have a chance to go to a Demolition Derby, standing room only, man. Yeah. Sprint cars, funny cars, all the rest of that stuff. Right? Yeah, there'll be seats. Demolition Derby, standing room only. So Montana man is, he's talking about the Demolition Derby. He said, look, the clientele for the Demolition Derby makes the Testicle Festival over in Idaho look like a White House dinner. Yeah. And so he sent a video. Some drunk dude with his shirt off, right, at the Demolition Derby. So, anyway, nobody's shocked that happened. Let's see, 29 Palms. It's sunny in 81. Pendleton, mostly cloudy, 65 right now. So a little bit warmer in California. In Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 84 degrees. Four weather advisories for Okinawa. What are they? A, there's a high wave advisory in Okinawa, a thunderstorm advisory, a heavy rainfall advisory, and a gale advisory. That means you got big weather. Big weather in the Western Pacific. So, big weather. You live on an island like Okinawa, you'll find out what big weather is. Late in the day in Afghanistan, in the Helmand province, where the devil dogs live right now, it is 104 degrees, heading for a high tomorrow of 111. So, still, you know, pretty as heat goes, it's all right. 110, 111, that's all right. That's pretty normal. It gets above 115, then we start paying closer attention. Currently, it is 67 degrees at the home of All Marine Radio under cloudy skies, as is the custom in California. There's one weather alert, and since I'm doing weather alerts, it's a beach hazard statement, which I believe is a riptide warning. So those of you who don't know what a riptide is, don't worry about it. Unless you're going to the beach, then you ought to find out. Okay? Find out what a riptide is and how to navigate it. Looking for a high of 75 today, 74 tomorrow, and 76 on Wednesday. You know, the weather's been pretty mild. Normally this time of year, the weather near the coast would, you know, be in the low 80s, which means in Riverside, it's in the 90s, which means 90 to 100, and which means out in 29 Palms, it's 100 to 110, so a little bit cooler. So we're going to take a break. Alex Holling is going to join us. Am I going to check news headlines? Maybe, maybe not. So, busy morning. Okay, so Krauthammer's book, Things That Matter, get that. All right, and don't forget All Marine Radio. Trying to get to Camp Lejeune, could use your help as we plan that trip and finance it. So we'll take a quick break. More of this great program coming up next. Well, you know what? How about if I do a couple minutes of news headlines? Because I'm not going to have a chance to get there, because once the prince comes on, right, he'll suck the oxygen right out of the room. So let me just real quickly go over headlines. Things that break squelch. Bolton says U.S. has a plan to dismantle North Korea's nuclear program within a year. Whoa. Not going to take like 20 years like we've been told. So that breaks squelch. Number two, concern over using U.S. military to help border enforcement, picture of the Secretary of Defense. So there you have it. U.S. and Japan have agreed to continue joint military exercises. That's simply affirming the obvious. So that's the news headline. Secretary of Defense, again, more affirming the obvious. Mattis says U.S. will keep current troop levels in South Korea. Okay. And other than that, that's it. Top five stories on Early Bird. Number one is... Stand by. Yeah, this is the news today, all 4 minutes of it. Normally, relative to DOD stuff, everybody takes a week. When 4th of July falls in the middle of the week, come on, that's the best. It means you got to take the whole week off. Number one, Air Force T-6 squadron pauses training after more physiological scares. An Air Force T-6 training squadron in Texas became the latest to pause operation after multiple pilots reported physiological episodes with the trainer's aircraft, the Air Force confirmed on Friday. This is an ongoing concern, and they can't figure out what is going on, whether it's the oxygen system, blah, 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 blah. Two, Senate confirms new military commander in Afghanistan and former admiral for the ambassador to South Korea. That's news from last week. Number three, Bolton says U.S. has a plan to dismantle North Korea's nuclear program within a year. Four, West Point gets first black superintendent in its 216-year history. Congratulations to Lieutenant General Darrell Williams. He's a 1983 graduate of West Point. Number five, Cyber Command. That's right. All the little doofuses. Cyber Command moves closer to a major new weapon. We'll have to talk about that. The fifth domain. Sounds like the entrance for like Star Trek, right? We're gathering for entrance into the fifth domain. Like, I didn't even know we had four domains. What are they? Exactly. All right, we'll take a quick break. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next on your home fort, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.